listen till my horse tired through darts and balloons till I won. And I drank all the lemonade, drove bumper cars till it seemed like I owned the whole bar. And wherever I went, well, I shook every hand. I said, welcome to my wonderland. I said, welcome to our wonderland. The Rule Book and Calendar of Kidri Embers, Chapter 3, The Hospital of Wild Sorrows. Kittery was sitting on a little hill of dirt beneath Paul, her back against his slender trunk. Her legs were folded beneath her green-brown dress. Her books were together on her lap, her hands on her books, and Dossie sat in the open cup of her right hand. She felt Paul behind her, a firm but gentle line of wood between her shoulders. A storm was coming, and the small sun shied over the mountains in a jam of blue. But above the distant ocean, over the muddy field where the forest broke, Kittery could see a runaway train of dark clouds now and then shining with electricity. To distract herself from the pain in her chest, she strained to hear the crack of thunder or the drops of rain tapping the sea. But the distance was too great. She'd been weeping for hours, and there was a heavy pain in her chest. Her ribs and belly felt broken through, as though there was nothing but a hurting air between her chin and waist. But this reminded her of something. In the put-away reaches of her memory, Kittery remembered an old house. Did they once live in it? Or perhaps her grandparents? The memory was select, cut away from the rest of her life. Nothing led to it or away. They were walking in the woods, she and her father, not using any path. The green sticks whipped, spring-loaded, from their legs. They both held their hands on guard near their eyes and kept a small distance between them. The house appeared in the middle of the forest, suddenly there, strange as a ship, toppled, filled with darkness, caved in, but still a house with a slot in the door for mail. There were broken windows, and the ancient paint had been transformed by age, become something new. It was no longer paint. Little hard curls, like ceramic manuscripts, swiveled off the shingles. Kittery had plucked some of these from the wood, heavy, glass-like rolls of white. Her father put his hands under her arms and lifted her, so she could peer through the jagged panes. And then they'd gone inside. There was a smell of dead animals, of sweetness gone wrong. With every step, there was a puff of smoke from beneath her shoe and a haunted creak from an elsewhere spot, from the wall or ceiling, but never exactly where she stepped. The house tilted to one side and the rugs were shredded, colourless ropes. There were ruined sheets in the corners and piles of dirt. At one point, in a different room, with the strange sound of ripping air, her father's boot had broken through a floorboard. He'd laughed to relax her, lifted his boot slowly back out, painted white with dust and red scratches on his bare legs. They'd crept together on their knees to examine the hole and underfloor. There were rolls of stuffing, small bones, rocks, a long shoulder of green and brown moss, and a strange little metal box. Kittery reached for the box, but Mr. Embers pushed it away into the darkness. It was like a dream. What is it? She'd asked him. Nothing, he responded, and then a moment later, it's the Sylvan. She asked him how he knew about the box, about the house, about the Sylvan. The downward song of a sigh came from his chest, and then he said, it's nothing you need to worry about now. She wasn't worried. That wasn't it. They had come to the full edge of a mystery, and now he was pulling away. He was showing her something, and then declining to elaborate. The feeling in her chest had the feeling of this memory, of a sudden hole punched through a rotten floor to the sound of ripping air, of being pushed against the wordless edge of mystery, and there was a deep, unfindable sorrow in the memory. She tried to breathe deeper. She had wept so hard, her lungs were wrung out and airless. Even her small rabbit breaths burned against her ribs. As she began to relax, as the sun broke more fully above the mountains behind her, she noticed an unusual quietness in the swamp. She sat forward and locked her attention on the glowing, quiet trees. The leaves did not flicker, there was no wind, nothing moved. Silence. It was like a photograph she was seeing, rather than the swamp itself. The trees had become statues of trees, the leaves green-painted shards of metal. She kept watch, waiting for a bird or squirrel to ruin the held form, a windless replica. The quietness drew at her. She settled on the small mound of dirt beneath the tree and joined the statue simulation of the trees, the still photograph of the swamp. As the trance overtook her, she wondered if she was the last one to arrive. Was she the last moving thing in the swamp? Darcy had already fallen into the spell. This was what followed tragedy, after explosions, after earthquakes, tornadoes, floods. Stillness was the hospital of wild sorrows. Beneath the tree, her body sat like a clutter of fallen branches. She hunched over her crossed legs and continued to diminish. Never before had her breath been so invisible inside her. Never before had her eyes and ears opened so widely, so gently and generally to the world. There were no problems now inside her, no tears or memory of what had happened the previous night. This was the life of trees, as they stood in the long waiting line of their lives. At some point later, the cold sprinkle of rain on her legs roused her. She stared at the smooth ovals of her knees, like pale garden stones. Then she heard a beating on the dust around her, a cool steam of rain. It was dark out, almost night. Darcy trembled in her hand. She closed her stiff fingers around him. When she moved her arm, she felt it creak, as though the bones had rusted. She blew warm air into her closed hand, over his fur. A white glass of lightning shattered overhead, and then links of cold, wet chain thudded against the dust. The trees rocked, the leaves whipped, and the rain burst in sudden puddles. She'd noticed it mildly right away, but didn't believe it. The furious storm was so on top of her that she supposed her feeling of being dry was an accident of perception. She waited to feel the drenching of her dress and hair. Yet, the contrast grew. Her knees were damp, it was true, but her hair and face and body were almost completely dry. Kittery rolled Darcy in a drape of her hair and set him near her neck. If Paul had had any leaves or sticks, he might have counted for a bit of cover. But Paul was a waif, a curling shepherd's staff, all his leaves and extra branches pruned away in the night's disaster. Before dropping back down into the silence, she glanced up. It didn't make sense that she was still dry. A darkness of blades extended above her, blocking the rain. A jagged piece of wood, perhaps. She stared, seeing the angles, the sharpness, the diamond-shaped head. Her eyes tightened in wonder. Standing right above her, the strangest umbrella. Machete wings spread wide, feathers extending to their limit. WYSIWYG.
I've been lying in this manger, down beneath a bolted tree, like a pilgrim bound for Mecca, but the road is all I see. So I lay down in the starlight, fell asleep and had a dream that I'd hunted all the mountains and I'd captured all the trees. Now lay my head down and let my heart take over me. Now lay my head down and let thy heart
to Dossie and to Kittery, but hold you tight, sets you free.
Now lay my head down and let my heart take over me. Now lay my head down and let thy heart take over thee.
The wind slid across, the rain splashed down all night long. Dossie woke warm and happy for a moment, but quickly noticed a discouraging pang in his whiskers. He sat up and sniffed the air and gazed around the warm space. What a comfortable neck Kittery had, what warm hair. He must have crawled up here at some point during the night, he couldn't remember. Maybe she'd placed him there. He hoped that was it. It was so nice to be cared for. His whiskers shook and straightened. Oh, what? He squeaked. Couldn't a mouse have a moment's rest? After all, he'd just woken up. One couldn't just burst into action. One needed a spot of rest, after such a restful rest. Dossie stared at the woodpecker, wondering if his whiskers were bothered by the bird. Even though WYSIWYG had kept them dry, Dossie had a complete skepticism about birds. No bird could be trusted. Dossie wouldn't even trust an egg. He squeaked and chattered to himself for a moment, and then began to crawl, claws safely in, down Kittery's motionless arm. He jumped from her wrist onto the wet mud and sniffed his way along until his paws hit pure, cold water. He stood on his back legs and inhaled. Salt. The rain was still falling, little cupfuls leaping in the puddle before him. He darted his tongue into the edge of the water. It tasted of brine, of fish, of the sea. "Is it this?" Dossie asked. "Something not so very the best about the water?" His whiskers flew to one side and then back. "Something about the water?" he confirmed to himself. He supposed he'd figured it out. A real rarity. Unlikely, even, to move from a whisker twitch to the trouble spot in such short time. A few dangerous moments of utter blankness passed. Such voids posed a substantial threat to his knowledge bank. "Walter, Walter," he said again, to keep the clue in mind. Maybe he should taste the puddle again. That seemed an excellent next step, but before he could send his tongue on the mission, his whiskers shot up, and he was running, pell-mell, up the soft bark of the pear tree. "Now what?" Darcy complained. "Another clue, perhaps?" he guessed. "Walter, Walter, Walter," Darcy said, as he scrambled over the bark. He had to keep the first discovery fresh. It would be so like him to get to the top of the tree and forget the main clue upon the presentation of a second. A long-standing difficulty, accumulating clues, but then tossing them overboard along the way. He cast about on the curling limb of the pear tree. There was Rain. There was Kittery, sitting like a statue below. There was WYSIWYG. He inched slowly over the side of the branch to examine its underside. His whiskers bounced when he saw the green, dangling shape. "The pear!" he cried. It hadn't fallen. "Isn't it wonderful? We have a pear here, and we have water there. Pear and water, water and pear." He took a firm grasp of his two clues, pear and water, and spun beneath the branch, stretching his sharp nails for the pear's stem. Wouldn't Kittery be pleased with this? A bit of food was what it was. He sensed the treasury goodness of such a discovery. It was very nearly heroic, but yet, he cautioned himself, while the pear might be good, the water, in contrast, seemed rather bad. Darcy's nails shredded at the pear stem. He picked and probed and pinched at the thick fibre. He probably should just use his teeth, but that was the acrobatic move of a younger mouse. "Slow and steady," he counselled himself. If he fell from the tree, the two clues would fall from him, right out of his leaky brain boat. "Pear and water, pear and water, pear and water," he repeated. His nails split away the outer stem, and now he stabbed the thin, green inner gut of the shoot. He could feel it breaking up, the pear twisting freely. Darcy glanced competitively toward WYSIWYG. "Yes, you kept us all dry, but who found the food? You can be the umbrella, and I'll keep us all alive." Darcy squeaked at his own cleverness, and he squeaked again, when the pear suddenly broke free from his cutting nails. His smile grew as the fruit fell. It wobbled in a fine green arc, heading directly, so he thought, toward Kittery's hand. "Wouldn't it be something if the pear landed right in her hand?" he thought. "And what if I ran down and just in time dropped into her left hand as the pear landed in her right? With three paws pointing and a humble mouse look upon my face, I'd say, 'Here is the pear that I fetched for you. And by the way, have I mentioned the dangerous water?'" Perhaps it was his perspective, dangling upside down on a branch at night in a storm. Or perhaps it was his naturally exuberant hope, which created the illusion in his mind. But the pear wasn't even close to falling into Kittery's hand. In fact, the pear plunged deep into the soft mud on the sloppy edge of the puddle. Pear and water had very nearly been combined. And if the rain continued, Darcy didn't want to think of it. As he shook with disappointment, a tinsel of lightning touched overhead. The momentary spark provided a most discouraging vista. Now that he'd seen the swamp, he could hear the rushing waters. It was clear and so obvious beneath the steady beating of the rain, the terrible, animal-like roar of rivers. It was a flood. Everywhere he looked in the brief strike above, he'd seen the pinching white wings of angry water. 100 splashing streams and creeks collided, and a huge, wide river had formed. Darcy held the cold ball of his fear and organized his team of thoughts. "Pear and water," he said. "Pear and water, one good, one bad." There was no time to lose. He had to get this news to Kittery and to wake her from her sleep or shock. He gave his claws a test and the moist bark, poised for action. "Let's go! Let's go!" he called. But nothing happened. His paws held tight, his claws more deeply inserted into the soft pear tree bark. "There's a raging flood and a pear in mud," Darcy said with clenched teeth. "We've got to tell Kittery now," he bellowed. He could see the danger. He could also see the prize. For once, he felt on top of things. Even the baggy outline of a plan had begun to form in his mind. But his whiskers held him in their shackles, locked him in a lurching hover, sadly tilted, half departing, in mid-errand. A tiny cold wind blew inside him as he realized. There must be something else, something even worse. A third clue. He swallowed hard at this. Despite his frustration, his whiskers knew what they were doing. He didn't think he'd be able to handle it. Keeping pear and water at the tip of his tongue was hard enough, but three things? Even the smartest mouse who ever lived would balk at such a mind-bender. He peered around at the dark, horrible flood. Water, pear, water, pear. At first, Darcy identified the white lights poking through the forest as a pair of stars, reflecting in some silvery woodland puddle. But his whiskers took his head upwards. There was not a single star to be seen in the cloud-sick sky. He looked back at the lights. There were just two of them, side by side, whitish-blue, rising and falling in a jittery fashion. Against the salty odours of the ocean, there crept a new scent, the rusty black fragrance of coal smoke. And then he heard the pot-bellied pumping of an engine, the muffled stroke of oil-slick parts and wheels slurping down the log path. At the exact moment he knew what it was, his feet broke free and he was speeding down the tree trunk. As he ran, he juggled his list of clues as rapidly as he could, that he might not forget the first. By the time he got to the third, he smashed the words together in a heap. Let three become one and none forgotten. Water, pear, and car, he shouted to himself. Water, pear, and car. Hold still. Haven't eyes to see below, nor the heart to really know what causes everything. When you fall into pieces, the burden increases, a helpless release, and then down into silence you go. Darcy wasn't sure if Kittery was even awake. Her eyes were open, that was true, but she was in a state. Perhaps, Darcy thought, she was in a bit of a shock. Shock was something Darcy was quite familiar with. Almost every day there was one or more extremely distressing events, something that just knocked the life from him. He ran up her arm and took a firm hold of the shoulder sleeve of her dress, and hauled himself to the flat of her neck. "Wapika!" he squealed, breathless into her ear. He waited a moment took hold of her earlobe and said it again as loudly as he could. Wapika! He fogged over, troubled by the word. What had he just said? Wapika. He dropped into a hunch to reconsider. There were three clues. There was wa, there was pe, and there was ka. He closed his eyes so tightly he saw stars. Sadly, his memory trick had found a bad end. He'd mushed the clues into a jumbled nonsense. But there was nothing he could do about that now. He'd done his best. Three clues was three too many. You could fit the moon into a pocket, but you couldn't put the sun in your shoe. His whiskers had simply asked too much of him. All things considered, he did know one thing. They were in danger. He took hold of two long strands of red hair and swung over her cheeks, shouting, Wapika! As loudly and as dramatically as he could. He crashed into her far cheek, settled on her neck, coiled, and then sprung again. After a few more attempts, he fell into a dangle. Her shock was too much. He looked into the darkness. Perhaps he might stumble upon one of the clues just in looking, the wa, or the pi, or the ka. There was water everywhere. Was that it? Wa for water? He wasn't sure. Luckily, reflecting in the near puddle were two glowing stars. He scanned all around. Finally, he saw it. At the edge of the puddle, the green skin of a pear. Pear! He shouted at Kittery. I found a pear! A beautiful roll of thrills soared through him. He was back in the game. He jumped down from her hair and splashed through the mud at the puddle's edge. He scrambled atop the smooth, green fruit. Look at this pear I found, he called, jumping up and down on it. But the sound of two doors smashing shut brought him into an instant crouch. The word was restored, and he whispered it into the skin of the pear. Car. Two men appeared, dark shadows, each ablaze on one side from the brightness of the car's headlamps. The two men took thick steps through the deep water. They didn't speak, both tall and crooked, with long jackets dragging in the water, with strange wide hats that drooped on all sides. One of the dark figures bent over Kittery. Darcy's breath rammed into a ball, and his eyes spread wide. The man heaved Kittery over his shoulders, and the two men turned back, heaving themselves against the flowing water. There was a slam of doors and a roar of engine, and the headlights spun a lighthouse arc over the rainy swamp. As the car banked away, Darcy saw a hard whipping of black and silver metal and the shine of glass. They were gone in an instant, rolling off down the log path. Darcy took a breath and another. His back was locked down. This was shock. He couldn't move. He was all alone, useless, frozen on a pear in the darkness, in a flood, without Kittery. And then, to make it worse, WYSIWYG seemed to have departed, and a plummet of rain began to drench his fur. Nothing could make this worse, he thought. There really wasn't anything. It could not be any worse. But then he remembered the cruelest part. Soon, very soon, if he managed to live through this awful flood, he wouldn't remember any of it. It would all be erased on the freshness of a new day. Something sharp penetrated his backside. Against his will, he rose into the air and then went down hard in the mud. WYSIWYG had grabbed hold of him and tossed him off the pear. Darcy watched as the bird began to peck at the fruit. Just like a bird, not to care in the least, Darcy thought. How could he eat at a time like this? Who ate in the middle of the night, in a floody storm? WYSIWYG spun and tumbled the fruit, and Darcy realized the bird wasn't eating. He was looking for something, and soon he found it, a small brown opening near the shredded stem. The woodpecker stuck his beak gently into the hole and then pecked around the edges. A moment later, the bird flung his head back. Hanging From his beak was a curling, brown worm. With two great hops, WYSIWYG was over him. Dossie cringed. A mouse and a worm together. The perfect meal for an awful bird. But then Dossie felt a cool, wet strand over his shoulders. In some unimaginable bird-like torment, WYSIWYG had placed the worm around his neck like a scarf. As the worm tightened, Dossie gasped for air. To be killed by a worm! But before he could ponder the dark meaning of all this, Dossie's stomach turned inside out as he blasted upwards into the sky. He was in pieces inside himself. I have exploded, he thought. It was a worm bomb of some kind, and now I am dead. He hung, dead-like, and exploded for a short time until he felt a stinging needle point all across his back. The sharp, grabby feel of claws. Enormous wings pumped overhead. Far below, he could see the undulating gloom of the forest. He was flying. They were flying, moving crisply over the dark mountain ridge and then dropping back into a velvet valley. And then soon, in the black-brown shadows far below, Dossie saw it. A mild spray of lights, like a white fog, blowing through the trees, and the smell of coal smoke, and the rumble of an engine, the car. High in the sky, in a wreckage of wind and rain, the woodpecker, mouse, and worm followed swiftly after the black and silver car, after the two crooked men with long jackets and loose hats, after Kittery Embers, with whom their hearts were somehow, softly, forever tied. I walk down the path through the woods, the falling snow, my neighbor, black as ice, a silver dream, as we go skating down. Uncontrolled.